We are studying the jazz era, and we just came down to see the museum and learn about jazz. It's very surprising to see what started in Buffalo and who started here and how it's still keeping on.
Mary Whitlinger is visiting the Colored Musicians Club Museum in Buffalo with a group of homeschoolers. Many students here are sitting at digital listening stations with headphones on, immersed in history and jazz.
It's a very good museum. There's a lot of hands-on, and it's keeping age ranges from probably 7 to 17 very involved.
George Scott is president of the club's board of directors. He'll be the group's tour guide leader this afternoon. He explains for us how the club's founding can be traced back to 1917, when the separate but equal legal doctrine in American constitutional law justified systems of segregation in this country.
Back in those early years, for a musician of color to be able to play in any club, regardless whether it was a high-class place or a dive, you had to be a card-carrying musician. And back in those years with segregation, a black musician just couldn't join the regular local because he was not allowed to. So in 1917, finally they got the okay from the American Federation of Musicians to have their own local, which would be known here in Buffalo as Local 533.
A year after Local 533 was formed, members started a social club where one could get a plate of pork, a pigfoot, a plate of beans, and a beer for 25 cents. The Colored Musicians Club would incorporate then in 1935 and become the gathering place for jazz musicians in Buffalo.
This is a parallel to the history of the American Negro, and of course, it tells a long story. The first movement of black, brown, and beige is called Black.
Jazz greats such as Duke Ellington, Dizzy Gillespie, Count Basie, Art Blakey, Ella Fitzgerald, Lena Horne, and Billie Holiday would stop here on their national tours. And as the reputation of the social club took on national dimensions, musicians Local 533 prospered.
Even though we had a smaller membership, we were more solid and sound than Local 43 was. We had a bank account. You know, we owned this building. We had a credit union. I mean, these guys were able, for the first time, to be able to buy a car, buy a house through here, not going to a regular bank.
As civil rights and the push for desegregation gained momentum in the 1960s, the American Federation of Musicians required black and white locals to merge. In Buffalo, that merger became effective in 1969, but not without issues.
When the merger took place, they depleted the bank account to pay off the debt that Local 43 had incurred. And they were fearful that once the merger would take place, that they wouldn't have a person on that board or somebody to represent the black musicians as far as what they needed and everything. And in the end, that's exactly what happened. So they were guaranteed 5 years of, they had to put on a black musician onto the board, but after the fifth year, you know, that was the end of anybody black being on the board of directors for the local here. And that still stands today.
But what also stands is an enduring legacy. The club's artistic director is Walter Kemp III.
It's funny, I gave doom and gloom for 1969, but you can find at any time anyone up here. It's the hip spot. Someone always say this wasn't the Colored Musician Club. It's almost like the Rainbow Club, because we have everyone in here. And that's probably the coolest thing. And I think in this place, we are creating an environment for love, social and economic equality, and discussion.
For the Arts and Culture Desk, I'm Scott Sackett on WBFO